Ellis. Okay, before I introduce our speaker, I just want to thank you all for being supportive, and it's been an honor for us to bring this to you. In the words of Sherman H., the great, grand, and groovy. And with that, we have Travis K. from Los Angeles, California.
I'm an addict, my name's Travis. Can you guys hear me? Alright. I thought most of you guys would still be sleeping. I'm not a morning person. When I found out the theme of the convention was the dawn of a new reality, I thought, uh-oh, you know? Because I'm a little more accustomed to kind of midday than dawn. Before I get started, let me remember my manners and thank the program committee and really everybody who helped put on this convention. I know we clapped, but can we clap again? I'm really much more used to having that job than this job. And I know that I've got the easy job and they've got the hard job. And I've had an amazing time this weekend. So thank you guys, everybody who served for the position and who volunteered your time. I think one of the beautiful things about NA is that we make it happen. You know, we're the ones who write our literature, we're the ones who put on our conventions, we're the ones who run our service meetings, we're the ones who sponsor each other, and that's why it works as well as it does. I got clean in the Central Maryland area of the C&P region, back before there was a Montgomery area. In fact, I believe I was vice chair of the Central Maryland area when the Montgomery area split off, which were exciting times. And I went to CPRCNA 1, 2, and 3, and then I moved out of the area, so I haven't been back since. So it's been an amazing homecoming for me. I got clean when I was 20 years old. And that was 28 years ago. You know, I've been clean a long time, and I'm still not really fond of being emotional in front of a group of people. So, but coming back here has been a much more emotional experience for me than I thought it would be, because there's so many people here who I've known all this time, and we've all stayed clean. When I got clean, NA was about 9 years old in this area. I think the first meeting was in 1976 at the VA hospital downtown. And now look at us. We're at CPRCNA 28, and so many of us have stayed this whole time. I want to especially thank my friends who came to support me. That's an amazing thing. I really feel like this has been a homecoming, and one of the things about the disease of addiction is it's a disease that makes us feel like we don't have a home anywhere. And one of the great gifts about NA is it gives us a home everywhere. So thank you guys for making me feel so at home. I think one of the other things that's been a real tripped me, and I will start telling my own story in a minute, but CMT 3, which was in Bethesda, Maryland, some of you were there, I know, that convention was, it was at this hotel, the Bethesda Hyatt, that I guess what I can say is, by the end of the convention, we were no longer welcome at the Hyatt Hotel anywhere in the Washington metropolitan area. But we regarded it as a success because we 12-stepped one of the hotel workers, so... so it's truly an amazing thing to be in the same location for a quarter of a century, and they want us back every year. I think I've grown up, and we've grown up, and NA's grown up, and I think it's a really wonderful thing. People don't say anymore that you need to go somewhere else to get recovery, which is what they said to me when I had a year clean. They don't say that anymore, because we've got experience and we've got time. So I got clean, I grew up, there's this weird echo, so. Disturbing to me. I grew up in Potomac, Maryland, so I don't have a really badass using story. I'm a white girl from the suburbs. I have no stories of being on the yard. I never shot dope between my toes, you know. So I apologize to those of you who were hoping for some really good drug running stories. That is not part of my story. But I never really fit in where I grew up. If you've ever been, if you're from this area, you know Potomac is sort of an upper middle class suburb. And I was raised by older parents. My dad had lived through the Depression. He'd been blacklisted during the McCarthy era, so I was raised by older leftist parents. I didn't have the right things, and my family didn't share the same value system as many of the people around us. And I never really felt like I fit in. I went to a high school where most of the people got a car when they turned 16. And my family rinsed out tinfoil and plastic bags to reuse them. So I was always awkward and bookish, as opposed to now. I have no less than 4 different pairs of prescription glasses. That should tell you something. So when I found drugs, they were really a solution to my problem. I started... Thank you. Can we get a hand for the interpreter? Her name's Lester. Thank you in person. I started using, and I had spent every day of junior high school feeling suicidal. And when I started using, I suddenly felt like I could live in my own skin. Drugs really worked for me at first. But like many of us, like all of us, I kept using after they stopped working for me. So I started using really because I wanted to be someone different than who I was. I wanted to be somebody cool. I wanted to be different and better than, rather than different and nerdier than, which is what I really was. And the thing about addiction is, it turns you into that person you're aspiring to be. If you want to be a badass gangster, addiction will turn you into that. But then you'll find out it's not really a good person, you know? And that's absolutely what happened to me. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be, an outlaw is not really the right word, but that kind of fringe drug user. And I became that person eventually, and it's a one-way street. I couldn't get back. I lost myself. Kurt Vonnegut has the line, you are the person you pretend to be, so be careful who you pretend to be. And that is absolutely what happened to me. The good news is that that works in recovery too. NA is not about what you think, it's about what you do. And if you pretend to be a generous and kind person, one day you're going to wake up and be that person. So, I'm not going to talk a lot about my using, because like I said, I've actually been clean more than half my life, and I had much more hilarious stories of devastation and recovery than active addiction. And let me say this. Those of you who say your worst day clean is better than your best day using, you're new here. Keep coming back. Because NA gives you back your heart, and then living in the world breaks it eventually. So, but anyway, what happened to me is a couple of things. I do like to tell this story about how drugs worked for me. When I was a teenager, I found punk rock because I was 15 in 1980 in Washington, D.C. So that was the golden age of punk rock. And I started going to punk shows at the 930 Club and D.C. Space and Fort Reno. And I realized, oh, I'm not depressed. I'm really angry. That's what I am. And I shaved my head and got a crew cut, and I stopped doing drugs for a little while because it was a straight edge scene at the time, which meant that drugs were actually uncool, and you know, I really wanted to be cool. So for a little bit of time I stopped doing drugs, and that was when my parents called me down and said, we're worried about you. Your grades are going to hell. You don't have any friends anymore. You're out till all hours of the night. Because I didn't have my Novocaine anymore. And when I started using drugs again, peace was restored. So that's how drugs work for me. But eventually they took me to a very dark place. And when I went away to college, well, not away, I went to College Park. It felt far enough. I wasn't living at my parents' house anymore. That was the path of least resistance. I was raised as an East Coast Jew. That's what people do, where I come from. And my freshman year in college, my mother got diagnosed with bone cancer. And my dad had already been ill for a number of years with a neurological disease. And I moved home to take care of them. And that was really the beginning of the end for me and my using. If you've ever taken care of someone who's dying, I don't need to tell you what that's like. They were both at home. I was 18 years old. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I certainly didn't know how to take care of my parents. And it was a really dark time. I had to learn to change a bed with someone on it. I just think that give someone a bath who couldn't get out of bed. And my mother and I had always had a difficult relationship. She was an addict who never found recovery. And so I was filled with resentment towards her, sorrow for losing her, just so many different emotions that were conflicting that I couldn't reconcile. And when she died, I just was off to the races. I just became a hope-to-die addict. It took me 10 months to find NA after that. And I'm not talking about it in detail because I don't want to start crying. But it was a really hard time. I remember at one point during that summer, the guy that I had been seeing broke up with me. And he was like my lifeline. He was like the one normal thing left in my life because we would go out drinking. And I came home and I called my best friend to come over. And I was so emotional. I felt like I was just gonna spontaneously combust. You know that feeling where you feel like I'm not gonna be able to tolerate my own feelings. And I closed the door to wait for her out on the front stoop. And my mother must have heard the door shutting. And she came to the door and she opened the door and I was standing there crying. And she said to me, "I wish I could make this easier for you." And she was dying of bone cancer. And I realized that I really loved her, that there was so much to love about her. I can't imagine, me personally, even with 28 years clean, I can't imagine the level of selflessness that it takes to say to your teenage daughter, "I wish I could make this easier for you," when you're dying. That kind of ruined the rest of my Tuesday. And I still miss my mom today. Those of us whose mothers have passed, everybody understands that's a primary bond. And for me, I miss my mother. She was not a great mother, but she was a really good person. She just wasn't, mothering wasn't part of her skill set. And I like to think that recovery has nurtured those parts of me that are most, the best parts of her. That kind of selflessness, I think, service in NA has taught me a little bit about being selfless and the nature of giving and how it can heal us from this disease. One of the things I like to say, I don't know if they still say this anymore. I have a whole list of pet peeves in NA. I fantasize sometimes about starting a pet peeve meeting where the topic every week could be a pet peeve. Like fear is the lack of faith. That's one of my pet peeves. Fear is a natural, instinctive response, actually. When the forest is on fire, animals are afraid. I've developed the faith I have by walking through the things I'm afraid of. And I still get afraid of new things. But NA's given me the ability to not have to act on my fear. So, anyway, that's one of my pet peeves. I totally lost my train of thought. I am afraid, actually, right now. So if fear is the lack of faith, we're all in trouble because I'm the spiritual speaker. Oh. Oh, I love you guys too. I love NA with all of my heart. I really do. I was talking about service, I think, and how they used to say when I was new, and for some time in my recovery, are you practicing service-based recovery or recovery-based service? What the hell is that, you know? Like, everything in NA, people want to boil everything down to this or that. Are you getting closer to your disease, or are you moving farther away from your disease? Like, are we all living on a two-dimensional line? I mean, my life just is, it presents itself as so much more complex than our slogans sometimes allow for. So I'm really a word person, and one of the things that was most difficult to me when I first got clean was figuring out how to reconcile the way I think about words with the way NA uses language. And if I have any message this morning for you guys, it's if you are someone who is like that, if you're someone like me who's cracked open the basic text, trying to figure out how to work a second step, and really struggling because the language in our literature that describes God kind of implies a certain kind of God, and that may not be what you believe. There's a line in the basic text that says, the right to a God of your understanding is total and without any catches. Just read that line over and over again, because I really believe that's true. This is a program where we can sit down together, Muslim, Jew, atheist, Catholic, Christian, Buddhist, and we talk about God and a higher power and spirituality and in a way that works for us and it helps us. That's not supposed to happen anywhere. Everywhere else in the world, people have world wars over that sort of thing. So for me, I'm not ashamed to say that I have service-based recovery, because I do. I have a disease that's about self-centeredness, and the only way I know how to heal is by giving to others. And it's not about necessarily a position with a title, but it is about, there's a line in Living Clean that says, spirit service is a posture of the heart. And I think that's really true. It's about trying to live a life that's about giving and not always about me and my anxiety about not getting enough. So, how did I find NA? Well, after this months of my hope to die using, a friend of mine was living in a group house, in one of those group houses where we'd always go over and get loaded. And this guy in NA moved in there, of all weird things. He had 11 months clean, I think, and I got a crush on him. So I started going to NA meetings because I knew I would see him there. And after a while, what people were saying in NA really started to make sense to me, which worried me a lot. So I basically 13-stepped myself into NA. And then I 12-stepped my best friend, and then I finally got clean. Really loony when I first found NA. I'm not accustomed to being around people who knew me when I was brand new, and there's so many of you here, it's kind of anxiety provoking. I live in LA now, and I've lived there for 12 years, so everyone there knows me from 16 years clean on. There's a benefit to that. Not least of which, because it's very rare that I walk into a meeting and see people that I've had unfortunate sexual relationships with. You know, the first CMP convention, I had just over a year clean, and I had just broken up with that guy that I 13 snapped myself into NA to be with. I was hooking up with someone else, so I spent the entire convention like trying to avoid him and trying to get with him, and oh my God, so much work. It's good to be 48. I'm in a happy relationship now, but I will say one of the things I have always enjoyed the most about NA is you can get up here and share about the most horrible, dysfunctional relationships and what a hideously bad partner you are, and then every guy in the place wants your phone number. It's true. I tell a story. When I first moved to LA, there's this convention there, San Fernando Valley Convention, and I moved to LA in January, and the convention was a couple weeks later, and I didn't know anyone in LA, and I decided to go to the convention, and I went by myself, which is really hard to do, and there's like 2,000 people who go to that convention, and I walked in, and I didn't really know anybody, and I felt really awkward, and I was kind of trying to be all right, and guys would come up to me and they'd be like, hey, haven't seen you, you know, where are you from, blah, 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 and I'd say, oh, I just moved here, oh, that's great, you know, how much time do you have, and I'd say 16 years, and they'd say, great, have a good convention, see you around. So, when I finally kind of figured out that this program really was for me, and there's a whole story behind that, which I don't think I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about, because I'd rather kind of talk about the second and third step, but what I will say is it involved me going to Amsterdam, which is not a good place to go if you're trying to stay clean. It involved me going to Amsterdam to see an old high school friend of mine, and while I was there, he completely decompensated. He basically lost his mind. And because the only tool in my emotional toolbox was a hammer, my only response to him was, you're going to have to pull yourself together. Which had always worked for me, but it's... if someone is actually decompensating, it's not really a good therapeutic approach. It didn't work. And in the end, he ended up slashing his throat. And he didn't die. He got found by the police by the side of a canal. He had slashed his wrist and throat with a broken bottle and was in ICU. And I was alone in this place, the Budget Hotel Utopia in Amsterdam, which, if there's a good metaphor for using, that works for me. And they wouldn't accept my calls back home. And I guess I had the first real moment of clarity about addiction. And I thought, I don't know if any of this has to do with using, but what I do know is that normal people don't go to European vacations and end up visiting people in the ICU. And I'm so tired of life being so difficult and so dramatic and so surreal all the time. All I want is just a little bit of peace of mind. And I'm willing to try this way. And I haven't had to use since. I will say I did not get peace of mind right away. Well, they say over time, not overnight. I was not somebody who lost the desire to use immediately. If you're in your first year and you still want to use like a it'll pass. It just takes time. It took me about 18 months before I lost the desire to use entirely. But what I did do is I said to myself, before I use, I will call someone, go to a meeting, and read a chapter of the basic text. And if I still really want to use after I've done those three things, then I will consider it. And that was my early recovery program, because it never failed if I did all three of those things. If I talked to an addict, if I went to a meeting, and if I read a chapter of the basic text, it cut the edge enough for me to stay clean. So that's my advice to you newcomers. I have no other advice. I certainly can't counsel you to stay out of relationships. Just don't pick up no matter what. You'll learn from your mistakes. When my sponsees who are new can't stay out of relationships, I just tell them, lean into it. Sooner or later, you're going to get sick and tired of doing the same thing. Just go ahead, date everybody. I mean, you know they're going to anyway. You might as well not alienate them. I mean, when I had about 2.5 years clean, nobody had to tell me to stay out of a relationship. I was like, I'm good, thanks. So I really struggled when I was new. I struggled with a number of things. First, I struggled with the first step because I am a white girl from the suburbs who never shot dope between her toes, and I would go to meetings where, at that time at least, people would say things like, you have to have lost everything to found this program. And I didn't realize how much I had lost when I was new. It took me some time in recovery to understand how spiritually bankrupt I was. That was really difficult. I thought maybe I didn't belong here. Maybe I hadn't hit a bottom. And at 20, a lot of the people were like, well, you know, how bad could it be for you? Not everybody. That was just the attitude of some people. So I really worried for a while. And then I had a friend, Jerry, who finally said to me, you know, Travis, this whole idea of a bottom, he said, you have a disease, the only bottom your disease knows is death. And as long as you're using, it will continue to get worse. So you just stop whenever you're ready to stop. And that helped me a lot. When I did stop, I found something got better so quickly that it became really obvious to me that I had a problem. We're always the last to know. One of the primary symptoms of our disease is denial. It is a difficult self-diagnosis. But when I stopped using, I was able to do things like shop at the big Safeway or Giant or those big supermarkets that were terrifying to me when I was using. I did all my shopping at the 7-Eleven when I was using, because I subsisted primarily on Stouffer's macaroni and cheese and Carnation instant breakfast, which I rationalized said breakfast in the title, so it was like a meal. And supermarkets were bright, and they had all those lights and all those choices, and people with children and their carts, and I couldn't make it through from the front door through the checkout with food successfully. You know, I would always abandon ship partway through the mission. So just being able to kind of go grocery shopping or wake up and not feel sick every morning, which I did when I was using. I mean, I didn't realize normal people don't actually throw up as their morning rituals, you know. I just thought I had a bad stomach. So just those kinds of things, to be able to reintegrate into society in kind of simple ways, made it really clear to me how far out of society I had been. It's so funny, the denial of our disease. I mean, I know we're not supposed to tell each other if we're addicts or whatever, but let me break it down for you. If you have ever had sex or drugs, you have a problem. Normal people don't behave that way. Just because all your friends do it doesn't make it healthy. But after I figured out I was an addict, I knew, because of the readings that they did, even though back then the text did say the steps were suggested only when I got clean. there were no musts in NA when I got clean, but I knew I had to find a higher power of some kind. And like I said, I'm a word person, and for me it was really difficult, because on the one hand, our text says the right to a God of your understanding is total and without any catches. And on the other hand, it says God has to be loving and caring. And for me, my God doesn't really verb, you know? My God nouns. It just wasn't really, it didn't really mesh with my understanding of spirituality. And I over-intellectualize everything. I'm not somebody who would ever tell someone your best thinking got you here, because my best thinking is very good. If I had followed it, my life would have been completely different. But I will say that you can't intellectualize your way into recovery. This is a spiritual program. It's not an intellectual program. And if you're trying to turn the basic text into a grammar problem, as I did for quite some time, you can just stop doing that. It's fruitless. It benefits no one, least of all yourself. So for me, it took some time, and I actually read some books, and I talked to some people who I knew had unconventional senses of spirituality about how the program worked for them. And that really helped me. And like I said, getting involved in service helped me probably more than anything else. Because if you're having trouble with the second step, try working the second tradition. It might help. You know how at the end of a meeting, when we circle up and say a prayer, and there's that sense of God in the room? That's God. You know, it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. And for me, like, because I got clean at a time when Rock Creek area was being formed, Free State region was being formed, East of the River area was being formed, Montgomery area was being formed, these were not, no one was singing Kumbaya in the area service meetings. These were not easy transitions, to say the least. But what I knew is we could get together in a room and argue and feel passionate and feel upset. And in the end, we circled up and you knew that we loved each other and we respected each other, because we believed in principles before personalities. Service taught me that I can not only survive conflict, but conflict can really, that it's a necessary part of being a human being. How much time do I have? Well, am I coming close to, no? I'm good? How much? All right, well, I thought I was going to say this at the end, but I guess I'm going to say it now. My best friend always says there's a reason why the first three words of addict are ABD. When I was on my honeymoon in my failed attempt at marriage, you gotta try everything once. When I was on my honeymoon, one of the places we went to was Biosphere in Arizona, which is this big dome where they tried to create a living environment. And they sent these scientists in there, and they were supposed to live in there for 2 years. And I guess it was kind of an experiment. If these scientists can live in here for 2 years, maybe we can colonize Mars one day, I don't know. But it was a failed experiment for many reasons. And if you tour Biosphere, it's just a tour of the failed experiment where they talk about all the many reasons why it didn't work. But one of the things that they tried to do that wasn't successful is they had to create an environment in there, and they were having really trouble growing trees. They couldn't get trees to grow in there. And they finally realized it's because it was a big dome, and trees need wind to grow, because wind resistance is what makes the heartwood and the tree strong. And I try to remember that a lot when I'm struggling, because we need conflict to grow strong. One of the reasons why NA is so strong is because we're not just a bunch of happy, clappy people who agree with each other all the time. You may not know if you've lived here your whole recovery, but this region does have a reputation. And singing Kumbaya is not part of that reputation. And I'm proud to have gotten clean here and spent my first 5 years in recovery here. I feel like I learned a lot. I mean, I got clean when you didn't get involved in service because you thought that was a good idea. You got involved in service because somebody drafted you into service. So, you know, as my friend Jimmy says, you get up to go rinse the coffee pot out, or, you know, go to the bathroom, and you come back and people are clapping because you're the GSR, you know. And I think there's a lot of ways to serve, and not everybody should be GSR. I get that. When I was new, I think I was a little bit more dogmatic about the path. Someone told me right before I walked in here, Ellen said to me, "You've softened up a lot." Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between recovery and just getting old, but I do think that you have to figure out a way to serve in the world. Whether it's sponsoring people, whether it's getting involved in a profession that's about helping people, whether it's about being a good parent, whatever it is, you gotta get out of your own way, and you have to learn to think about others before yourself. It's just too painful to be in the world any other way. So for me, I finally kind of found my second and third step path. It's funny to talk about. I'm not usually one of those speakers who goes through all the steps with you guys, and that's not really my intention, but I do have things to say about them. One of the things I love the most about NA is that when the book talks about a moral inventory, it's not about, nowhere in there does it tell you what the morals have to be, you know? It's not about holding up someone's moral code to your behavior and trying to figure out where you do and don't match. I think that one of the beautiful things about the inventory steps is that they give you the ability to discover what your own values are and where you are and aren't living up to them. And that's really important. For somebody who was raised in a leftist family, I mean, our values never matched up with the values of the people around us. And I would have a really hard time being part of a fellowship that tried to impose a value system on me. But it has never been about that here, nor has it been about what I think. It's been about what I do. All right. Once you go through that process of taking that inventory, oh my God, the sixth step. Is anybody in here on their sixth step? Yeah, I'm sorry, it'll get better. That to me is just that's the toughie, man. My mother raised dogs when I was growing up, and I always said the sixth step was like, she'd bring the dogs home from the vet from getting dipped for fleas, and they'd be in their little crates, and she'd open up the door, and they'd go running out of their crates, like, oh my God, it stinks in that crate, you know, and they'd run into the other room, and you'd see them sit there for a minute, and then they'd go, oh my God, it stinks over here, too, and they'd run into the other room, and it'd take them about 15 minutes of running through the house before they figure out it's them. That's pretty much what the sixth step felt like to me. And you know what the key that unlocked it finally for me was? I finally had to come to a place where I could say, if I'm this person right here for the rest of my life, that's okay. I accept myself exactly the way I am. Because it's not about removing your own defects of character. That is not what it says in there. Nor is it about acquiring a bunch of assets. I think one of the most comforting things about the inventory steps is that they're just about getting rid of what's in our way. That same guy, Jerry, he used to always say, why do I try so hard to become what I already am? One of the people I heard speak this weekend said that it was so wonderful to feel so much love when he so often didn't love himself. And I can say that for me, at this point in my recovery, the biggest gift is almost exactly the opposite. Not that I don't care about what you think, but I love myself. If I met me, I'd want to be my friend. NA has turned me into a pretty amazing person. And there's a lot of other stuff I could tell you about that horrible marriage and divorce, and I've traveled around the world, I've gotten a PhD, let's hear it for education. I've taught university classes, if they only knew. But really, it's not about all that stuff, because what you know is, NA is not the Make-A-Wish Foundation, you know? You don't get rewarded for good behavior in here. It's all about grace, and everybody gets their turn at the bottom of the wheel. You know, you may be up today, but everything changes, and it's got to be an inside job for me. You know, what makes me really happy is being useful. It's being useful. That's what makes me happier more than anything else. So I hope that I shared something that helped some of you, and thank you so much. I love you guys.